Welcome back to Banter by the Bay with me, DJ Busstop, on radio.dominican.edu. Today is a very interesting day in Bay Area sports. We're going to start off with the 49ers winning, of course, last week in New Orleans and losing Patrick Willis for the season with a turf toe, which is a very interesting injury, and it's way more painful than people may think it is. Then we will talk about Warriors past couple games, starting with, you know, the Clippers, very good win, and then move on to the Suns and Spurs. And then we'll end up talking about Giants free agency, and will they sign Pablo, and is there somebody we might be looking at right now? All right, first let's talk about the Niners. There's two breaking news, really, to start with in the show. First is Willis is out for the season with his turf toe injury. He had surgery on it yesterday. What turf toe is when there's a buildup of you know, pain, and it's like pain, shards of your bone breaking in your toe, and it's really a painful thing. It's every time you plant or anytime you really walk, you're using your tips of your toes, and that's where the pain really is, and it's just an awful thing, and you can't really play through because it's really on such a sensitive part of your body. So they decided to go through with the surgery. They thought maybe he could make it through without the surgery, but you know, there was a couple setbacks in the last week or so they decided to go through with the surgery. And you know what's it's interesting about that is that we've seen the emergence of Chris Borland with the past two games. He has 35 tackles, you know, two takeaways, and a couple sacks. He's really shown up and really filled in for where Willis has left off, and he really has shown that, you know, he's a great replacement for the rest of the year, and hopefully can become better, and Willis will hopefully mentor him like he will. We all know Patrick Willis is a great guy. Willing to do anything for his team, the Niners, to win. So I'm very excited to see the growth of Borland. And the second breaking news is really great, great news for the San Francisco 49ers. We got Alden Smith coming back. He's back in practice on Tuesday. He's working out with the team. Harbaugh came out and said, you know, he came back from missing five games last year and was able to play 20% of the snaps. Hopefully this year he can do the same. He looks good. He looks fit. He said, wow, we need this at the most important time. We're coming to the home stretch, you know, 5-4, one game above 500, chasing those Arizona Cardinals at 8-1, going after those pesky Seattle Seahawks at 6-3. So we have a ways to go. We have to get back into it. And really, with the start of him, he could definitely help extreme amounts, because with him there, we can develop a pass rush and really become more of a pressure the quarterback team, cause more turnovers. It's really just a added addition to us. You know, right now we're very, very thin at the DN spot. You know, we have Aaron Lynch, who's playing great. Ahmad Brooks is gained a couple pounds. He's not as fast. I mean, he did have the game-winning play in New Orleans, but if you look at the past nine games, he has not been at his top form like he has been in the past years. And I think that's because he's seeing a lot more attention without another great pass rusher on the line. Justin Smith is doing what he does. He doesn't play as many snaps as he once did, but, you know, he's still at the level for whatever snaps he plays at the highest level. But you get all of them back, they have to start doubling him, or he's just going to burn them on one-on-ones. So this is where we got to go. We have to make the quarterback throw the ball quicker. And he's a very underrated run defensive player. He really gets up in that line, knows how to play the line, doesn't get past the line of scrimmage and let people cut behind him. He's really a discipline. I mean, let's see how he starts off. He really might disappoint for the first couple plays. I mean, come on, he's been gone for nine weeks. Who knows what he's really been doing? Hopefully the Niners have been keeping track of him. Hopefully he's been working out, keeping up with what's going on. I'm real excited to see him back, just to see how our defense can even get better. I mean, we've been playing great for the last couple weeks. You know, again, I'm going back to Chris Borland, Anton Bethea, our safety. He's really playing up high level. He's seeing the quarterback's eyes and reading them, and he read Drew Brees perfectly last week and, you know, had a nice interception. He had another one that he could have had, a couple pass defense, and then he came up and laid some licks, and he's definitely a physical guy. I think he's more a cerebral player than Dante Whitner was, and he kind of can read an offense better. Dante Winter was just come up and I'm just going to knock you out kind of player. So it's kind of a nice different type of safety where you know that he's not going to get burned deep, or you know he couldn't come up and not give him, make a 15-yard penalty because he's leading with his helmet. Just plays like that are just so nice to see. I mean, once our defense stops having penalties like we were in the beginning of the year, we're shut down. I mean, we're holding teams to scoring low points. I mean, we held the Saints to 24 points. That's great. You know, we should win those games because you have to score a lot on the Saints. They have Drew Brees. They have a great offense. They have Sean Payton, the offensive genius. They're going to score. It's like with the good teams. They're going to score their points, but it's limiting how many points they score or making turnovers. Because if you make turnovers, they lose a possession, and then you get the field position or you get the advantage or momentum. It's just a big plays. So this is what we have developed the past couple weeks. You can see it in our offense. It's becoming more alive. Last week against St. Louis was not as much, but our defense definitely still played up to par last week, only letting up 13 points. You should win any game that you only let up 13 points. Their defense really wasn't stellar. It was our offensive line that was not playing well. We'll go on. Tremaine Brock out another game. He's been out. This is his seventh game already missing this season. He also has a toe injury like Patrick Willis. His is a little less severe. They think that he should be ready by next week, but we've all been hearing that for a couple weeks now. It's letting other players step up. We've seen Chris Cook play well. We've seen Culliver play well. The real reason why I would like to see him back is because Jimmy Ward, our first-round pick, is just not playing well. He's getting beat. He feels a little slow. I mean, if you get Tremaine Brock back, he can fill right back. He can do that nickel position and guard their fast receivers. I mean, you saw it against Arizona. John Brown beat Jimmy Ward twice over the top for two touchdowns. So he's kind of our weak spot, I would say, on our defense. Parrish Cox is playing, of course, out of his mind right now. Everywhere. Reed is playing really well. Eric Reed, Justin Smith, Ram McDonald. Quinn Dial got a couple plays. He had a sack against the game. Borland, Scooter was out last week. Hopefully he's back this week. He's a very important. You know, he's also a good pass rusher and also a good cerebral player. Let's talk about Ahmad Brooks' play against New Orleans. You know, he came around the edge. Borland was able to take out the outlet receiver that Drew Brees was looking for. So he had to hold the ball for an extra second. Ahmad Brooks came around the corner and smacked the ball out of his hands. Borland came out of nowhere, diving on the ball, grabbed it, and that was the game. We kicked a field goal and won in overtime. Why this is so significant? Why this is so interesting? Because if you remember last year to this game, it was a very similar situation. They're driving. They need a score to win. And Ahmad Brooks comes racing around the corner and drills Drew Brees from behind. The ball comes out, and the flag also comes out, hitting roughing the quarterback on it wasn't even a pass play. It was just he was going back and he got hit, and you know what, he wasn't throwing the ball. It was the ball popped out, and they called it roughing the passer. It was just the most unbelievable call. So it's a complete redemption. It's a complete flipping the switch. Thank God they didn't call that on us, because you know, I mean, they couldn't call it this time. It was just a great play. But last year, that was just a killer. That was the difference from getting home field for the whole playoffs or playing in Seattle. So it was a very frustrating game. You know, there's been a couple games like this where we really have not played up to our par. This game, I think we did in the first half. Our running game was great. We were able to make some big holes. Bolden got open a bunch of times in the first half. But then you saw in the second half, it got complacent. I mean, we had some nice runs. We're trying to stick with the runs. And then our receivers were just dropping the balls. Anquan Bolden had four drops. I mean, his career high was three drops per game, or three drops in one game, and he beat that. I mean, that's not a career high that you want to get. Crabtree had a couple drops. Also a fantastic catch in the fourth quarter to keep us in the ball game, which I'll touch on in a little bit. Bolden doesn't drop the ball. Bolden's a sure-handed receiver. It's a very rare sight see Bolden drop the ball, and he dropped it four times. I don't know if something's in his head. I promise you, it's not going to happen again. He's definitely going to the jugs machine and catching hundreds of balls after practice, making sure he's seeing the ball and catching the ball, because he had 97 yards, one touchdown, eight receptions. That's great. But he was targeted 15 times, and he dropped the ball four. So he would have had 12 catches and way more yards. He dropped one that would probably have been a 60-yard touchdown. So it's very interesting, because we perceive somebody as so good at something, and when they don't do it well, it's just everyone's throwing blame on them. If we lost this game, they were blaming on Bolden and Crabtree not catching this ball. Yeah, but they've been so reliable. I mean, it was just a rare occasion. Hopefully it doesn't happen again. You know, if it starts happening more and more, then you kind of call them out on it. I don't know if I would be so up in arms about it. I probably would be if we lost. I'd be like, oh, if we had to catch, as you know, our receivers are not playing well this year. I mean, Crabtree is definitely not playing to what he was last year. Bolden's definitely playing to the same level. I mean, Stevie Johnson's playing well. Brandon Lloyd has been nowhere for the last four games. So it's very interesting. And Vernon Davis, of course, has been absolutely garbage. Where has he been? I mean, he's a great run blocker. Maybe he's definitely helping our run game, but he's dropped a ball, of course. I mean, he doesn't have the greatest hands. We all know that. He's got that speed. I think he still has a lingering injury or something, or something's going on with him, because he's just not right. He usually is just running downfield. You don't see him go on those deep routes. You don't see the ball go towards him very often. We don't see many catches from our tight ends. I think we only had one catch from our tight end last week, and that was Carrier, who's our third tight end. So it's just, we need to become more of a fluid team, using all aspects of our game, from running the ball to throwing the ball to using our tight ends. So I think we have developed our run game. We know we can run the ball, but I developing the pass game is based off the run game, because if they have the deception that you're going to run the ball, then the wide receivers get one-on-one coverage and they get open. But if there's no run game, they can sit back in zone coverage and really cover up the whole field and make it real difficult, or bring blitzes and rush the quarterback. It's just a very difficult thing to do. You want to really deceive the defense. And that's what Kaepernick is not the best at, is reading the defense. So if they know it's a passing situation, they're going to just drop back and read him and see who his first target is and drift towards them and, you know, hopefully make an interception. Or, you know, they're going to force him to make a big play. And, you know, our offensive line is not that great. They get rushed up the middle real easy. So it's a development of our offense. And then we need to get our tight ends in the game, because they're great hot routes. Hot routes are when they're getting pressured up the middle, or a blitz is coming, and it's a quick receiver play. You know, you just throw the ball, get the ball out of your hands real quick, and hopefully they make a play after the catch. But it's quite easy to say, you know, oh, just make a hot route, and, you know, if they blitz, do it. Because, you know, they might fake the blitz. They come in and they look like everyone's coming, and then back off at the last second and drop into zone, and you throw that hot route and it gets picked off because they drop right underneath it. So it's so difficult to play quarterback, because you have to make so many decisions in so much split second time. You know, you only have the average quarterback sitting in the back in the pocket is 6 seconds, three to six seconds, and it's just, you have to make all these decisions. Do I throw it 50 yards down the field? Do I throw it 1 yard to my outlet receiver, or do I call a different play and do I run it up the middle? There's just so many different aspects of what a quarterback could do. Oh, the line is playing to the left a little bit. Are they coming with the pressure to the right, or are the safeties going to drop back or come up? You know, there's just so many different things going on in a quarterback's head. And that's why the greats like Peyton Manning and Drew Brees and Tom Brady, they just know what they're doing. They know defenses so well, and they've studied defenses so much that they can read these defenses and be able to make these split decision seconds very quickly and you know, correctly. You know, every quarterback makes a decision quickly, but is it the correct decision? Probably not, because there's always somebody going to be open down the field. You know, there's another receiver that had a better coverage, or there was a mismatch somewhere. But those great quarterbacks always are able to find those mismatches or always able to make it to their strengths. So hopefully Kaepernick can develop into that one day. Let's move from offense to defense. Let's talk about every aspect of our defense and how I'm going to praise them for what they've been doing. I'm going to praise Vic Fangio, the defensive coordinator. He's really, really done an absolutely wonderful job. He had three out of their four best defensive players out to week 9. Patrick played a couple games this year, but he was never at his full health. You know, he had it with four games. He had 37 tackles. That's not Patrick Willis type of play. Vic Fangio's come up with a scheme. He has to simplify his scheme a little bit. You have all these rookies and all these young players, and they can't be in complex schemes. So he's able to make his scheme easier for them to know, but still more so difficult for defenses to really have trouble with it, or offense to have trouble with it. You know, he's blitzing more this year than he's ever blitzed before because, you know, we didn't have Alden Smith there. We couldn't get a pass rush whenever we want. We had to make fat pass rush. We had to bring people to have a pass rush. So he's developed a more man-to-man coverage kind of defense, where last year we were a zone and we would drop back into coverages and hopefully let people get the underneath, but never nothing over the top. But this year we're letting more over the top because we're more into that man-to-man. And it's a difficult situation because, you know, our cornerbacks are not the most physical, and that's what you have to be in a man-to-man coverage. You have to be a physical. You have to be the Seattle cornerbacks or like Tlaib or Revis, very physical players that are able to dominate off the line, you know, hold up receivers, not let them get on their route, really disrupt the offense and cut off routes. There's so many different aspects of playing man coverage than there is playing zone, because zone is a very cushion-based defense where you let receivers run because they're running in and out of zones, so you know what your zone is, you know what to cover, you know who's in your zone. It's more difficult because you are not able to just follow one player around. You have to, you know, be really like 180 look of peripheral vision in front of you because people might be coming behind you, people might come in front of you, and people might come in at you. So there's so many different coverages in the zone. You know, they might drop back deep, or you might have a pressure up front where you might only have the first 5 yards. So being a zone team was very easy for us last year because we could have pressure and make the quarterback throw it quickly. But this year we couldn't. And if you let the quarterback have more than 6 seconds in the pocket versus zone, they'll pick you apart all day because people running in and out of zones are going to get a little confusion. People are going to be open. Big plays will happen. So that's why you have to bring the pressure, go to man coverage, and, you know, really stop and dominate the trenches. The trenches are the defensive line. You really have to dominate that because that really causes the confusion on the offense, is when the offensive line is not doing well and the pressure and the quarterback's getting hit, and, you know, he wants to get the ball away so he doesn't get hit all the time. He makes bad decisions, that interceptions happen, you know, holding them on defense, 3 and outs. And then we go to our offense, which just needs to, you know, get down the field and score some points because our defense is playing top-notch right now and holding teams and making turnovers and really, really playing at a high level. So next game, we're playing the New York Football Giants. Some big keys, their rookie wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr. is an absolute freak. He's a 6'3 receiver that can jump out of his building. He needs to be stopped. He's their, right now, probably their only offensive weapon. Eli throws up the ball to him around 15, 16 times a game, which is a very heavy amount. Their running back, Andre Williams, is not a great running back. He's a rookie from Boston College. Got some good speed. You know, their offensive line is not great, but it's Eli, and we're playing in New York, and it's going to be cold, so you never know what's going to be going on. Let's see what else. We We have to stop their passing. The Giants' defense are weak. We must stick to the run game, what we're good at. We got to keep pounding the ball, And if we keep doing that, we'll open up the passing game, and you'll see a side of the Giants. We can definitely open up. And Cap's a good cold weather player. We saw him in Green Bay in December in the playoffs when he was running through the Packers and by the Packers and showing up everyone in negative 4 degrees with only a short sleeve t-shirt. And he was just an animal that game. That really was the start of Kaepernick. So when we come back, we're going to start talking about the Warriors, recapping the season so far and their 5-2 record. Talk about the last three games, the Clippers, the Suns, and the Spurs going 1-2 in that stretch. And tell you what they need to work on, what they've been doing well. So stay tuned to radio.dominican.edu. Traffic jam when you're already late. No smoking sign on your cigarette break. It's like 10,000. Isn't it ironic? It's like rain on your wedding day. It's a free ride when you've already paid. It's the good advice that you just didn't take. And who would have thought it would figure? Wait on me. To Banter by the Bay with me, DJ Bustop, on radio.dominican.edu. Let's talk some Warriors basketball right now. Exciting first seven games of the year. We're going 5-2. Our two losses were this week to the Spurs and the Suns. I will talk about that later. But first, on last Wednesday, after my show, the Warriors were on, and They beat the Clippers pretty handily in Oakland. Great victory. Showed our potential of our team. Really showed how we can even improve from that and make better and play better. And very interesting remarks from Doc Rivers after the game. I will also touch on that. So let's recap that Clippers game. The Clippers game was a very, very high-intensity game in the beginning, going back and forth. Curry and Klay were just drilling threes. Curry was really going off. Klay was kind of slow. Another huge contributor, a person who finds a way to play in big games at big moments. Draymond Green was just an animal on the boards. He guarded Blake Griffin, absolutely shut down Blake Griffin. Had more points than Blake Griffin, had more rebounds than Blake Griffin. Griffin had one rebound through the whole game. A power forward only having one rebound. A man that could fly out of the gym, a man who can jump over the backboard, only have one rebound. It's because Draymond Green was just so good at getting up into him, making him shoot from the outside, or really not letting him get into a game. You know, if they let the Clippers get in out and run and throw lobs, you know, their lob city, and play all like that, they get into their groove, and it really is just, they can do whatever they want, and they feel good, and they feel like they can do anything, so you want to make them stay out of it, and that's what we did. We had Bogut in the lane, not letting him come through. I mean, he sent away Chris Paul a couple times. He sent away Blake Griffin a couple times. He just is such a great, great defender. Because when he goes up, you know, he doesn't come at the guy. He goes straight up. If you go straight up, they're not going to call a foul. I mean, because you're not going at him. You're not lunging. They're initiating the contact. So he's just knows how to play defense. He goes straight up and down. He puts his body. He changes shots. You know, if they could keep a stat for changing a shot, which I mean is they go up for layup and he goes straight up and they have to rearrange the way they're going and shoot it differently, you know, make it more difficult for themselves, that's like a turnover because it's so difficult to adjust in the air. Only the greatest can do it, and it is very, very important that we have a center that can guard the rim and not let anyone come through, because then it allows our guards to get beat and recover. I mean, because they can recover and have a big man to protect them. They know that if they got beat, they're just not going to let an easy score, so don't foul. It just makes the defensive rotation so great, because you always have to be helping out, because offensive players know where they're going to go. Defensive players have to react, and it takes a lot of time, longer time to react than to know, so it's a very difficult situation. Our defense has improved so much. You showed Curry was guarding Chris Paul, and he was in his pocket. And Curry has this new signature, I would call it. He hits a three, and then they inbound it. He steals the inbound and gets a layup. He did that a couple times the past week, and you know, I call that the Curry special, chicken fried Curry, you know, or something like that. And it was just it's just a great, great, you know, boost, momentum, 5-point swing quickly. And it's just, you know, players, you know, are just a routine. They take it out of the basket, go on the hoop, just throw it into their point guard. And, you know, he defies it. He comes out of nowhere, snatches it, comes from behind, takes it away. And, you know, he's done a couple times when a big man's gotten a rebound and he slides under them and just steals a little back away from them and just hits a three right in their face. He's just a smooth player. Back to the Clippers game. Our ball movement is just unbelievable. They're swinging it. You know, if you ever seen a weave play, it's when a player, they go through each other, around each other at the top of the key, and it's very distracting for the defense. And they ran that a couple times perfectly, and had an open three or had an open drive. Our offense became different when Andrew Bogut catches the ball, because all he does is look for people, and he makes these great passes. He anticipates. It's a big word in sport, anticipating what's going to happen. You know, if you can anticipate what's going to happen or anticipate when somebody's going to make a cut, then you're on the same page, and you can make that pass, and then you know that they're going to be there, and when they're there, they get an easy bucket. So he's now had 3 years with Klay, Curry, and, you know, Harrison, and Iggy now with 2 years, and so he just knows how they play, and finally Steve Kerr has given him the opportunity to make plays and become more of an offensive threat, and now he's able to do it. Look what he's able to do. He's able to get assists. He's one of the greatest passing big men. He's developed into such a great, great offensive weapon, and you know, he can score 8 points on 6 attempts, which is just great. I mean, The only things we have to worry about is him getting fouled, going to the free throw line. So, you know, he's only like a below 50% free throw shooter, which is absolutely horrible. You know, he's not an offensive threat, but he's become more. He is an offensive threat. He's not a scoring threat. I would like to change the way I said that because, you know, he can score, but he's not. He doesn't look to score. He looks to pass. You know, he looks to set people up. He looks to make the offense work. You know, he's looking to set big screens and put some hard screens onto some little players and open up Curry and Clay for three. You know, he does all that kind of stuff, and he does it great. So keep going on with it. He does get we got a couple fouls quickly against the Clippers with moving screens. They're starting to call this more and more. I mean, in the Warriors have huge turnover numbers, huge. I think it was 26 in the Clippers game, 22 in the Suns game, and 20 in the Spurs game. Anytime you get into the 20s, that's just a huge number. And to win against the Clippers and have 26 turnovers, it's just mind-boggling. I mean, there's good turnovers and there's awful turnovers. Like, good turnovers, you're driving, you look to kick, and somebody comes through the lane, you know, anticipates the play. Bad turnovers when you pass to the guy the ball and it just goes through his hand, or traveling, or, you know, catching the ball, getting a rebound, and letting it slip through your hands and go out of bounds. Just plays like that is just unacceptable. And the Warriors are starting the season with lots of turnovers. They lead the league in turnovers. And it's just hard to watch because turnovers are just the most disappointing thing because you don't get a shot. You don't get an opportunity to score. I mean, when you give the other team 26 other more opportunities than they had to score before and you not to score, it just doesn't make sense how we won and won by so much. They must have really done nothing with our turnovers, and that's what the case was, of course, and they also could not rebound, and we also offensively rebound well. But that's also an issue this year is rebounding. We've only had one game this whole season where we out-rebounded the other team, and that was the Clippers game, and it's amazing. It also shows how good our shooting is in the past games because we don't have as many rebounds as they did, but our team is needing to develop and rebound and become more cohesive. I mean, David Lee is definitely, it's hard for me to say because I'm not a very big David Lee fan, but definitely this year I can see him being more of a help. And again, this is hard for me to say because I know how I'm going to get responses to this. Yes, we need him back. We need his rebounding, and we need his scoring. We need three scorers on the team. You know, Clay, Curry, or two. And then you need that complimentary third scorer, and that would be David Lee. And he would definitely help out. I mean, against the Phoenix Suns and the Spurs, we really needed a third scorer to really offset, and especially a low post scorer. If you don't have a low post scorer, then teams can spread you out and cover your guards out wide a lot easier. I mean, Curry will get a lot more open threes. Clay will get a lot more open threes if they have to worry about David Lee coming down the lane and finger rolling and being players. You know, he's so ambidextrous with his left hand, with his right hand. He can go either way. He's just definitely been a dominant scorer in this league for a while. And then he gets 10 to 15 rebounds a game, and that's what the Warriors need. That's really, really what the Warriors need. I think at first you start him off on the bench. The bench definitely needs scoring. And then after a while, you kind of ease him back into the starting lineup, let Draymond run with the twos for a while, because Draymond definitely would be the scorer and the vocal leader of that squad, and I think that squad would just become so good defensively. I mean, you couldn't score on that squad with Sean Livingston. You got Andre Iguodala, and then you got Draymond Green. Those are three great defensive players, so it's going to be interesting when Daly comes back. We play Brooklyn Nets tomorrow. That's going to be an interesting game to see how we're going to match up. You know, this is our first Eastern Conference battle. Eastern Conference is a lot weaker than we are. We'll see how we go. I'm going to take another break now. You can keep listening on radio.dominican.edu, and we're going to come back and finish up on the Warriors and then go on to the Giants and Hot Stove. Let's see who are the Giants looking at, who are we going to play with, are we going to pay Pablo? So stay tuned to Banter by Bay on radio.dominican.edu. I can't be with you.
I can't be with you. All of this stuff sucks. Yeah, all of this sucks. If I can't be with you. And no Oscar, no Grammy, no mansion in Miami. The sun don't shine, the sky ain't blue. If I can't be with you. Does he tell you he loves you when you least expect it? Does he flood in your heart when he kisses your neck? No scientist or biology, it's obvious when he's holding me. It's only natural that I'm so affected. Oh, and my heart won't beat again if I can't feel him in my veins. No need to question, I already know. It's in his DNA.
And welcome back to radio.dominican.edu. You are listening to Banter by the Bay with me, DJ Busstop. Let's recap that Spurs game last night. Difficult game to watch. Spurs playing Spurs basketball, you know. Unselfish, passing the ball, moving the ball, you know, getting open shots, making the other defense look awful, getting rebounds. They're not known for being an offensive rebound team. They're really not. They were one of the worst last year, but the Warriors just couldn't get a rebound. I think they let up 10 offensive rebounds, and we only got one, which is the lowest number we had in the last 10 years, one offensive rebound. It's really a poor statistic, and, you know, we have Bogut, we have Azili, we're missing David Lee, like I talked before. We have Draymond, we got Harrison Barnes, Iguodala. They should all be coming back and rebounding the ball. Curry should not be getting 7 to 10 rebounds a game. You know, he's averaging like 7 rebounds. He should not be doing that. We should have the other four just pounding that glass. I've seen a lot of players leak out. I mean, we want to be that up-pace team, but securing and ending the defensive possession is the most important part. Come back and get that ball. All five players need to get back there. And once you get that ball, then start to run. Come, go and fly down the court. Ending the defensive possession is definitely the most important thing of really of defense. I mean, you can play 24 seconds of great defense and they get that shot off the last second. You have to secure that rebound or they get another possession. And you have to play defense again, and playing consistently hard defense is tiring, and it does a lot of strain to the body. And offense then becomes harder because you're tired, and you're using so much energy on your defense side. You don't want to, you won't use all your energy on offense. So you start to shoot less, pass open shots, start shooting with your arms, not your legs as much. So it becomes more of a difficult task. So defensive rebounding is just so important in the game today. We really needed to develop a consistent defensive rebounding, you know, way. We need to have Bogut crushes the ball hard. I mean, he does everything he can, you know. He's definitely out there challenging players, you know. Once he challenges, goes up for a block, he's really out of the defensive rebounding situation. He's got pulled out wide, or he's under the basket, or he's going straight up and somebody behind him needs to help him out, and that's the four spot. That's Draymond Green. He needs to be flying in behind him, rebounding. It needs to be Harrison Barnes coming in and rebounding. And David Lee, that's what he's great at. He's great at grabbing rebounds, defensive boards. You know, he's good at getting offensive boards, too, and going back up with it. He's just a great low-post scoring threat and something that we really don't have right now. I mean, Festus Ezeli's have shown a couple good moves down low, but he's only shooting a couple shots a game and not playing in any of the games that are more up-paced. You know, against the Sun, it was like a run-and-gun game on both sides, and we did, you know, Ezeli's still coming back from the injury, and you don't want him in that up-and-running game. You want him in that slow-paced game, you know, where he can control the middle, he can be a defensive threat. There's a problem. Festus, you know, when he gets the ball on offense, it needs to be in a position where he just takes the ball and goes up with it. Because if he puts the ball on the ground, it's going to be taken away from him. Like, every time he does. Every time he puts the ball on the ground, the little people come in and take it. He just doesn't have control, and he has really bad hands. He really does. Marcus Thompson, a Warriors follower, a Warriors writer, he tweets all the time, you know, Festus Ezeli got the worst hands in the league. And I agree with him. Every time the ball comes to him, it looks like he's trying to swat at it. And it's frustrating. And then he tries to dribble it, and it dribbles off his foot. Or, you know, Manu Ginobili comes in and easily takes it away because he just has to dribble so high. He thinks he's dribbling the ball low, but that's still coming up pretty high and easy for people like Ginobili or Parker or, you know, Eric Bledsoe. Goran Dragic did it a couple times too. I mean, come on, man, just get the ball and go up with it. You're so big, so physical, just go up. And he has that great little righty hook, and he's done it a couple times this year, and if he just doesn't put the ball on the floor, he would be great and can catch the ball a little bit better. It's impressive what the Spurs have done. You can't argue with Greg Popovich being a Hall of Fame coach. You can't argue with Tim Duncan, Parker, and Ginobili going to the Hall of Fame also. I mean, look what they did. These guys rarely play on back-to-backs, especially if it's against two Western Conference competitors, especially the Clippers and then the Warriors. I mean, they had a hard battle last night. It was a very defensive battle last night. And they went on a 14-3 run in the last couple minutes and to beat the Clippers. And then they come back and put a whooping up on us when we had rest and they're tired. It wasn't a long flight last night, but still they had to get on a plane and fly over, get ready for this game. It just shows how professional they are. And, you know, and Kerr had a funny comment after the game. He said, you know, when I retired 12 years ago, it was the same group of people. So, you know, this is what happened. 12 years later, they just know each other so well. In the beginning of the year, they were in a funk. You know, yesterday they were 2 of 14 on threes, and last night they hit 10 threes, of course. So the Warriors caught them on a good shooting night. Everything was moving well with them. They were fluid. Their offense is exactly the way we want to run our offense. I mean, they're so similar. They're so exactly the like. You know, this is what Kerr's trying to run this Spurs offense. You know, moving the ball, getting everyone involved, and they just showed us how to run it. They showed it how perfection of this offense. And, you know, I mean, it's great for us to learn. great for courtesy. It would have been nice for us to win. You know, Greg, Tony Parker last night, it was just crazy. He was doing what he does best, dribbling through the lane. If he doesn't get anything, dribbles out, you know, quick pop, you know, pick and roll with Tim. Tim just sits there, gets those open shots, then gets those rebounds, or goes up down low, banks it in. He does just has everything. He's just Mr. Fundamental. He knows how to play the bat. He knows how to play correct basketball, good basketball. And he's really just probably the best power forward of all time. I mean, he's five rings going on for his sixth. This will be his last year, I believe, because he picked up his player's contract for $10 million this year. So I really think they think they're going to win another one, and that's why he came back. I mean, it would have been easy for him to walk away with his fifth last year, end on a winning note. I mean, if I was going to go, I would want to go on the same way. And I think he does too, and he still thinks he can win another one. I think he wants to catch Michael with a sixth. That would be very impressive. He's definitely got to be a top 10 player of all time just by how dominant for how long. He was a first-round pick 18 years ago. that's just amazing. It's the consistency, you know. He got hurt a couple times, but always came back to full strength, you know. He started in an offense where it was the Twin Towers. It was two huge big guys, him and David Robinson playing the two low post positions, and them having a slow offense. And now they play on this up-pace offense faster than what they used to, and he's adapted. He's developed a longer range shot than what he started his career out. He's just showed how a professional should work. And, you know, every first round pick, really, every first overall pick should be like like Tim Duncan. Everyone wishes that was true. Yeah, I mean, it's just Mr. Consistent. And Manu had a great game last night, just hitting a bunch of threes. You know, he can get any shot at any time. He's just so methodical in the way he moves with the basketball, and, you know, gets around defenders. To the hoop, it's just like nothing's in a rush for him. He knows he can get the ball up. He knows how to go and draw the fouls. So that was a great, great way to show Harrison Barnes, this is how you could play. You know, you can play like this under control. You don't have to be flying through the lane. And I think Harrison has been more of this way, of more of a methodical player so far this year. He definitely had a good game last night. He started the game off hot, I think 4-for-4. Had a couple trips to the free throw line, which is always a good thing to see with Harrison Barnes. You know, that's just a criticism, you know. He's such a big, athletic three guard. I mean, you should be able to go to get more free throws, easy extra points. And he did. He's becoming more aggressive. He's just not trying to shoot over by fadeaways. he's been shooting the three-pointer real nice this year. He definitely kept us in this game for a long time. And, you know, he would be a nice fourth scorer on our team, because if you need David Lee back, you need him to be our three scorer. You know, you have Curry and Clay are 1-2 scorers. One of them is definitely going to go off on one night. So you just have to have complementary scorers, and he would be a nice 9 to 12 points a game, hopefully. And then D. Lee comes back, hopefully adds just 15 to 18. And then we have a complete team, because our bench is what it should be. Our bench is long. Our bench is deep. We have athletic players, defensive stoppers, especially if Draymond Green goes back to the defense. You got Sean Livingston, Iguodala, Draymond. You got Barbosa as their scoring option. And then you got Festus Ezeli. So that's a defensive-minded second team. And that's where you would, if I was Kerr, I would never go with all five of those players at once, because you have no real scoring threat there. Draymond Green is probably your most prolific scorer, him or Barbosa, but you can't rely on those two to score all the points and all the possessions. So I would either have to leave Curry, Thompson, or D. Lee in there and leave at least one scorer in. All right, I'm going to take my last break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about Giants after the season, hot stove. Who are we looking at? I heard we're looking at an outfielder. Who is that? Some older player, but I will let you know when I come back here on radio.dominican.edu. Now,
She's a ghost to me. Long white dress in the dark moonlight, too real to me. And she comes tonight with a love that's so right. All my life I never felt like this. Your love is driving.
Hello and welcome back to Banter by the Bay on radio.dominican.edu, and we're going to finish up today about the Giants, the World Series 2014 Giants. Now we're going to 2015. World Series behind us. Let's go. Let's see what we can do next year. Let's make it a true dynasty, you know. All those haters out there saying, well, we're not a real true dynasty, but if we win next year, we're a true dynasty. So, of course, you know, Giants baseball, what's going on this season, this after the season is, of course, we have to re-sign Pablo. That's the biggest deal we have to complete. The Red Sox are in. The Red Sox are ready to go all in for him. I heard 5 years, 90. That's the same as Hunter Pence. I heard 6 years, 110. You know, so it's up there. I mean, the Red Sox are the only other team other than the Giants really in the race to go for Big Pablo Panda. They want in. They don't have a left-handed bat in their lineup. You know, Ortiz is really the only left-handed, and the hot corner is really just in a very down position right now. There's not many good players at that position. He's definitely top five, so he can be seeing a lot of money. They're thinking about $18.5 million to $20 million a year. Pablo's agent's looking for 6 years. I don't think he gets the six. I think he gets somewhere in the four to five. I think the Giants are going to offer him four for 85, which will be a little bit over the $20 million that he might get for the six for 120 that Boston might offer. If Boston offers six for 120, he's gone. But if they offer five, I think he stays with the Giants. And it's just, and it's something. I mean, we've had him since he was 16 years old. We signed him out of the Dominican when he was 16 years old, and he was just so, he's been brought up, and Bruce Bochy talks about him like a son. He's really a homegrown player, and I feel like, you know, it's just the excitement. He never got to really try free agency and see what's out there. See, it feels good. I mean, everyone wants somebody to pay a lot of money for them, and it's just a great feeling, and you want to see how much you're actually worth, and the only way to do that is let yourself open on the free market. So that's what he's doing. I think he needs to realize that we, as a hometown player, you have so much more leeway. Which what that means, if he goes to Boston and he goes hits 16 home runs and 70 RBIs and they're paying him $18+ million, they're going to go crazy. But if he does that as a Giant, we know his past. We know what he can do in the future. So we have more. He has a lean. You know, he has a little space to, you know, not as do as well. Because Boston, especially in Boston, they'll be all over you in 2 seconds and without anything really going on. And yes, he's going to hit more home runs because that ballpark is definitely more friendly. Where he hits in the lineup, that would be crazy. It'd be Ortiz, him, and Cespedes if they keep him. But I heard if they bring in Pablo, that Cespedes will be on the trading block, and the Giants would definitely be interested. Torii Hunter is the outfielder the Giants have been showing interest in. He's a left fielder. He's looking for a 2-year contract. He's a 39. A little old, but he's been playing well. He had 15 home runs last year with, I think, 80 RBIs, which is Michael Morse numbers. He played in Detroit, which is more of a friendly ballpark. You know, I don't know. Torii Hunter's just, he's old. I want some fresh outfielder. There's this young Cuban that I forget his name, but the Giants are definitely interested in, and he would definitely be a huge asset. He might be getting a $100 million contract, and he definitely will be on our top priority list if Pablo does decide to leave. So we really need to keep Pablo. We really need everyone to come back and really come back for the next year. Kershaw won the NL Cy Young this year. Of course, he went 21-3 with a 1.77 ERA. That's just absolutely ridiculous, and he deserves it, but who cares? We have 3 World Series. So I will be here again next week from Wednesday from 6 to 7 on radio.dominican.edu. Good night, all.